Call from mom. Answer it. Call silenced.
Instacart knows nothing gets between you and the game. That's why they make ordering from your couch easy. Stock up today and get all your groceries for the week delivered in as fast as 30 minutes without missing a minute of the game.
You have 47 new voicemails.
Download the app to get free delivery on your first three orders while supplies last. Minimum $10 per order. Additional terms apply.
Hi, I'm Lauren Sherman, the host of Fashion People. I love fashion, obviously, but shopping for fashion online is kind of annoying. There's endless scrolling, my size is always out of stock, and I can't actually find what I want. No one has really made this work for me. That is until List. Instead of browsing different stores one by one, on List you can see and shop all of the best fashion. List is the secret shopping weapon now used by all my most stylish, cool, and in-the-know friends. Don't shop around. Join 200 million fashion shoppers, including me, on List.com. That's L-Y-S-T. Or download the List app on the App Store today.
Second hour of four, we're Grant and Danny. Welcome back, 106.7 The Fan. We'll bring on Jesse Doherty in just a minute on the Mattress Warehouse hotline of the Washington Post to talk about this ongoing story with the Nationals cutting the pay of their minor leaguers, and then the Nationals' veteran big league players deciding that they're going to make up the money loss for those players. But, Danny, you asked me a question last hour when we were discussing the proposal from the Players Association to the owners about this olive branch that everyone's talking about. And you were curious as to, you know, why is this so beneficial for the owners? So I just asked that question to one of the players who's pretty involved in this process. And here's what he said. Basically, all the players making $10 million or more money will have the deferment money taken out of every single paycheck. If the playoffs don't happen, owners will get two full years to pay that money back. If the playoffs do happen, then they would get the money paid after the playoffs are over.
Got it. Okay.
The owners are worried if there's no playoffs. Exactly. They'd then have enough money that nothing really matters, and so they can pay the players. But it's not just for the playoff money. It's actually, you know, every one of Scherzer's paychecks or whoever the player is making over $10 million that basically you take money out, you put it all in a pot. You don't have to pay it to them for 2 years in case you need that money. And I use need in air quotes here because there are no playoffs and you don't get that TV money that's going to fill your coffers. All right, let's get to the Mattress Warehouse hotline. Jesse Doherty of the Washington Post joining us on Grant and Danny. So, Jesse, why don't you tell people exactly what happened this weekend? Each team's kind of making their own decisions on what they're going to do with minor league players, and we found out what the Nats' plan is now.
Yeah, so for April and May, it was league-mandated that each organization would pay minor leaguers a $400 a week stipend while baseball wasn't being played. After that, it was up to the individual clubs to decide how they would handle that moving forward. So in the last 4 or 5 days, we've seen a number of approaches to that. The Oakland Athletics stopped compensating players entirely. Other teams have committed to that $400 stipend for the rest of what would have been the minor league season, which would go through August. And the Nationals took a unique approach in that they are going to continue compensating players, but they were going to lessen that stipend from $400 a week to $300 per player. At the same time, we found out this morning the exact number of players who were cut at the end of last week. It's 40. A mix of veterans who were on spring training deals, players who one front office source of mine said probably would have been cut before the season, but also a good number of guys who would have been carried for the whole summer had a normal season been played. So that's sort of the whole of the Nationals' approach this weekend and what they notify players about.
How does that approach compare to teams around baseball? Obviously, the A's are not paying anybody, they've decided, which is terrible. What about other teams?
Yeah, I'd say a more common tactic has been to just continue the $400 a week stipend, whether that's for the month of June and then decide on July and August later, or as some teams have done, a small handful, just commit to doing that for the rest of the season. So the ways in which the Nationals deviated from that are that they didn't give the assurance that you're going to be paid for the whole summer, and also they did reduce that weekly stipend as well. So I'd say on the scale of, you know, most friendly and most ideal for the minor league players, the Nationals do fall toward the bottom of that scale, not quite where the A's are, but it's not great for sure.
Jesse Docherty is on the Mattress Warehouse Hotline joining us here on Grant and Danny. So, look, the releasing of the players is really tough. The whole pandemic is tough, right? I mean, we're all, you know, most of us are taking pay cuts or losing jobs. And, you know, a lot of companies have trimmed the fat. I hate to say it that way, but in air quotes, this is what people are doing. So I can understand that if someone's not going to be around or you don't use them that often, that's no different than a lot of companies. What I don't get, though, is I guess let's start here. The amount of money saved from paying minor leaguers $400, and I don't even know how they could live on that anyway, a month, to paying them $300, if you just do the math, it doesn't seem like it would really register to a team run by a billionaire that a $1 billion is $1 million 1,000 times over. I think people sometimes like forget how much money that really is. And I'm not here to start doing the billionaires are evil thing. I think that's overplayed in our country anyway. But without getting into politics, I guess my point is it's just hard for me to understand how you justify not taking care of your minor league players when the cost wouldn't be that massive.
Yeah, I think so. From like a human standpoint, it would be nice to assume that anyone, let's take Mark Lerner out of the equation right now, but any owner or anyone in that situation could commit to helping players who are generally grossly underpaid and rely on this $400 a week stipend. I mean, I had one player text me that, you know, getting that $100 restored is another, you know, pays for a full grocery trip that he would have otherwise not had for him and his family. These are not just individual players operating on their own in a lot of cases. But if we take even the human element aside, let's sort of look at this in a more cynical way. The PR hit from reducing that number seems to be worth whatever it would cost to pay $400 a week in itself. Like, you're going to get obvious blowback from fans, from pundits, from reporters, whatever, whoever it may be, for publicly reducing that weekly stipend, which already is a very negligible amount of money in your overall sort of revenue, even in a year when revenue doesn't come in. It seems like it would be worth paying that just for the sole fact of avoiding the PR hit that comes with it. So I'd say, you know, tier one is let's just help each other out and be good people. And you know, whoever's in more need right now, it's good to reach out by extended hand. And then tier two is from an organizational standpoint, from an image standpoint, you'd think it would be advantageous for the Nationals to just not, you know, reduce that money by $100 and thinking that's worth sort of the blowback that will come with it.
Jesse Docherty, The Washington Post on Grant and Danny. The happy ending to this story, I suppose, is that the team's veteran players have stepped up to pay the money that the team is not going to these minor leaguers. And this was an idea that kind of got started with David Price, who makes a couple $100 million as a pitcher for the Dodgers. And he on his own said, I'm going to pay for the next month for every minor league in our system to get back what they lost. The Nationals are doing the same thing. Fill us in.
Yeah, it's you know, it seemed like right away that this decision did not sit well with some key players. I think what we've seen in this sort of battle between ownerships and union and players and everyone in the labor discussions is that I think players have been stabilized and have a voice maybe more than they typically do, especially speaking out against their organization. So right away, one thing that was rattling around social media was that Keith Law, a reporter with The Athletic, had tweeted Mark Lerner's net worth in relation to cutting $100 a week for minor league players, and Patrick Corbin retweeted that. And, you know, this is kind of where we are right now. I mean, with Twitter being a way for athletes to share their opinions, it seems like that's sort of a silly way to go, oh my God, a guy's speaking out. But that retweet, in a way, spoke volumes to the fact that not just Corbin, but evidently his teammates didn't feel right that minor league players were going to be slighted like this. So Sean Doolittle puts out his statement around 11 p.m. last night, later tweets that players met on Zoom immediately after the decision was publicized in reports and decided that they wanted to help and fill that gap. You saw Yan Gomes chime in and say he wanted, you know, stand together. And I think the idea is that they feel that the minor league players are really integral to the organization. In a lot of ways, the backbone of the organization, in that major league teams use them as a developmental tool and also to fill the gaps when major league players get hurt. And the players wanted to help fill that financial void that was being left by ownership. And I think the way it fits into the bigger context of what's going on is that there is a lot of fighting right now between those two parties, owners and players. And this was the Nationals' way of saying, in a maybe a not so subtle way, that we'll pick up the tab in a way the owners aren't willing, and maybe the public perception of players as the greedy side of these negotiations would lessen a bit. So I think there is certainly ways this reverberates into the bigger picture for sure.
Just doing some math here, and Jesse Docherty is on Grant and Danny. How many minor league players in the Nats system are we talking about?
You know, Grant, you said there'd be no math. I didn't know how to start calculating things. Man, that's off the top of my head. I don't know exactly with the 40 cut, but there's also, you know, players in academies, Dominican Summer League, guys who have stayed here stateside because they couldn't travel back to their home countries because the pandemic is really prevalent there. So I don't know the exact number. I'm sorry to say, but but you're right. It's worth calculating what those numbers are, right?
Right. I guess I'm wondering because it's, you know, you're talking about 400 times whatever that number is, basically, if the Nats are making up $100 a month for probably the rest of the baseball season for those players. And
right.
Whatever it is, I mean, if there's 500 players, and again, I don't know what the number is, and I think that that's probably a lot, but you're talking about 200,000, which it's an amazing thing for the players to do that, but for an organization, it's just not that much money. And I'll play devil's advocate for a second and kind of set you up to go wherever you want, but it's easy to come down on based on how this looks, which is a terrible look, or to take the high road and say, hey, these are the lowest paid people in your organization. They're critical to the development of the team. They're going to be your next Nationals, many of them, and all those things. But also, this situation is not that different than all the other jobs and companies around the country largely right now. So I can see a little bit of both of the sides, but man, it is tough to hear that a sport as well off as baseball and a team flourishing like the Nats couldn't find $100 for these players.
Yeah, and I think that there's a lot of elements to this. I mean, I think it's frustrating for these guys and troubling that a major entity of Major League Baseball is not represented by a union. So in the way that a lot of these discussions and a lot of these issues get worked out on the pro level by the PA, minor league players have never had that kind of representation, even though they are, as I mentioned before, this sort of backbone for the entire machine. And that's when you see these issues start to become, you know, prevalent. And there's other elements too. I mean, players were not able to apply for unemployment benefits this year because of their employment status with baseball. So they're actually making less than the average American would make through an unemployment check with their weekly stipends that are just being determined, you know, by organizations from an umbrella level. It's not saying, you know, you're a certain level of players, we're going to pay you this, or we're going to pay you this, or you've been in the organization for this many years. It's guys have sort of been put into this herd and treated in a way that many would say is really unfair. So I think it's obviously in the right now with the pandemic going on, I think, as you mentioned, you can say this is similar to what's happening in a lot of businesses. This is similar to what's happening across the country in so many industries. But I think it is worth using this situation, using the idea of $400 a week, which a number that's, you know, not so far off from what these guys are typically paid, but we just don't know it because these issues aren't covered as much as they should be. And I'm culpable for that as well. I think this is a good opportunity to examine the systemic issues in minor league baseball and think of how these guys are treated year to year, not just right now, because honestly, the treatment in normal times when seasons are going is not much better. And that has to change because the conditions are simply unfair. They're not, you know, normal working conditions that, you know, a lot of unionized entities are, you know, have standardized across the country. And I think that it's, you know, if anything, this whole situation is giving us a window into it. And I think we should take it and not stop the conversation here.
Yeah. And that dialogue started right before the pandemic, really, over the last year or so. And if anything, it's only grown substantially. And this will really put a spotlight on it. Jesse, the information is helpful. Thanks so much for joining us short notice.
Of course, guys. Thank you.
You got it. Read Jesse Docherty's work in the Washington Post. Always did a great job covering the Nationals. We're Grant and Danny. We'll get Danny back on the horn next right here on The Fan. I'm Grant, and I am joined by Danny Moore on G&D on 106.7 The Fan. Thanks to Jesse Docherty hopping on the Mattress Warehouse Hotline. You missed our conversation with him on the Nationals cutting the pay of their minor leaguers. A couple of people tweeted me and said I was saying month, not week. So that, just to clarify, sorry if I misspoke. I mean, the Nationals players were getting a $400 a week stipend that baseball mandated teams pay their minor league players. It was kind of known all along that at some point that mandate would go away and it would be up to the teams to continue it. Some have, others have not. Teams like the A's have said they won't be paying players anything at this point. the Nationals have lowered the number by $100 to $300. So, I mean, comparative to Oakland, I guess you give them credit for that. Here's the problem a lot of people are having, Danny, is that you're owned by a billionaire. You're coming off of a World Series championship where presumably you could Scrooge McDuck onto a bed into piles of cash. And the minor league players, who are in some ways kind of the bedrock of the entire operation, trying to work their way and live out their dreams, most of them will never get to the big leagues, are going to be paying the price during this pandemic. The issue is that it's not as simple as just saying, well, here's what you have to do. Because we're not saying that to all these other companies that are just getting rid of part-time employees, that are just telling people to take pay cuts, that are just trimming all the fat and firing people that aren't used that often. This is happening in every industry all around the joint. That doesn't mean, though, that we can't feel bad in places where maybe financially it doesn't have to happen. You know, it's easier to do it this way, but you could probably still make ends meet if you paid that extra $100 a week, you know, the $400 a month that the Nats players are now going to make up for these players. And I give Sean Doolittle, Pat Corbin, and whoever else is involved, we don't really know, credit for doing that.
Sure. And obviously, as you said, it's happening all over. Everybody's taking a haircut. Everybody's taking a shave, right? This is a normal thing. But not all industries are created equal in terms of, you know, dollar amounts and who owns them. And, you know, the small business owner that's trying to keep his restaurant afloat by, you know, doing takeout orders and slashing people's hours and doing stuff part time and, you know, furloughing people. They're doing it to survive. The Nationals organization is in no danger of not surviving at any of this. So you got to go a long way before, you know, $5.3 billion in value goes down to zero and everybody's got to, you know, lose jobs and the like. So I understand your point. And it's a good one and it's worth the perspective. I guess I would just say that it's a bad look. The first thing I thought of was Doug Harris. Where players and other coaches and people in the front office for the Nationals VP that, you know, had leukemia, basically had to do a GoFundMe where they're selling memorabilia. And you just sort of look around, you're going, if only there was somebody with nearly unlimited resources that could maybe help out one of their employees at a time of need. And it to me, it was a black eye on the Nationals organization. I thought of that. And it was hard not to compare those things. Small market teams, the Kansas City Royals, who have been dreadful for a couple of years since their World Series runs, they're paying their minor leaguers. Their general manager, Dayton Moore, had a wonderful set of comments about that, about how important it is, not only just for their organization, but for the growth of the game that's facing an existential crisis among youth and how, you know, the television numbers and participation rates and how kids feel about baseball. This is how you grow the game. Is those guys that may not make it to the show go back and they coach and they instruct and they help grow that love. And that's something that's very important for, you know, not that much money for a Major League Baseball team. I understand that it's nothing's ideal right now, but it just doesn't look very good when everybody else has found a way to do it, pretty much with a couple exceptions, and you're one of the teams that isn't. It's, to me, it's something that's a little bit of an embarrassment, honestly.
Yeah, I'd have to go do the numbers because I've seen plenty of teams that are doing it this way, and I put them all in the same bucket. I think it looks bad on all of them, and I agree. I think it is embarrassing just because of the money that is made, right, and the money that is had when you're talking about an owner that supposedly via Forbes worth $5 billion. But I don't know that there's any one bad guy. It's a systematic failure, in my opinion. And the minor leagues have kind of been this way for a long time, and I'm glad it's getting more attention, and it'll clean itself up, hopefully, over the next few years. It seems like things are going to be downsized, though, and maybe there will be fewer teams. I texted with somebody with a big league organization and just said, hey, you know, how many minor leaguers are there actually in these organizations? Because that was one thing Jesse and I didn't have offhand last segment. And the response I got was some have over 300, some are closer to 250, even 225. It just depends on how many teams they have. Some have multiple short season or rookie ball teams. That's like the GCL, the AZL, the DSL, some of those low-level leagues. So let's just say on average you have a 275-person minor league system, okay? $400 a month at 275 players, which is 100 a week that you've now taken away, being made up. So this is the money that you're saving is $110 a month, $110,000 rather a month. That's June, July, August, and it won't be all of September. So let's just say times 3.5. I mean, my rough math here, and this is not exact, but I'm spitballing live on the air. You're talking about around like $400,000 potentially if there are 275 minor leaguers that you're talking about. That's not nothing. And to you and I, that sounds like a lot of money. But, I mean, that's not even a gate.
The scale's different. The scale's different. It is.
It's hard to believe that you feel like that is a worthwhile cut of an expenditure for these players that are literally trying to get groceries. Some of these guys are 28 and have three kids and a wife. And they'll go drive Uber and they'll, you know, do whatever it is that they can. They'll make their own money doing DoorDash or stuff up or whatever. But, you know, I just can't imagine feeling like, well, we got to trim money somewhere. Here's $400,000 here. Let's do this. And I think that the Nats are stepping up, and I mean the players themselves. It doesn't make it a better look. It probably makes it almost a worse look for the organization.
I think it's worse.
Same as when they're like banding together to get someone a World Series ring or whatever. But it's a very positive story for the players, and you can see how tight-knit this organization is, and these guys lead by example all the time.
Yeah, the players got it right, and I just can't believe that they have to do it. You know, it really is frustrating because you're either in Camp A or Camp B. And Camp A is you recognize how important a minor league system is to the game, to your organization, to everything. And I know it doesn't seem like a guy, you know, playing only 19 games on the Gulf Coast League has anything to do with, you know, Daniel Hudson closing out a World Series, but there's a link. There absolutely is. There's a chain. There's a pipeline. The iron sharpens iron. If your minor league system is good, you get more Juan Sotos. If your minor league system is good, not only do you get more Sotos who are future stars, but you get the guy that comes up and helps you in the bullpen in a key stretch in July. You get more Eric Fetties who have a couple pleasant starts. You get more of those things when your minor league system is good. It's a worthwhile investment. That's why it's been around since basically the dawn of baseball. And if you don't recognize that, you do this. And that to me is something where, you know, you've got to make hard choices right now. We all do. Everybody's kind of balancing that. We've had to make some personal choices, and I'm sure our neighbors have and everybody else. I get that. But the scale of money that we're talking about, you know, it's different than, you know, if I owned a small business paying an employee, you know, 20 less dollars a day to save 500 so I can keep ordering product to make sure we have a store. This is a multi-billion dollar enterprise, you know, where the scale is just different. So to me, there's no way around the fact that it's a bad look.
Grant and Danny on 106.7 The Fan. We are cruising toward the double play at 11:45 and a Beltway Blitz at noon on a day in which we will play a new game in the 1 o'clock hour called Random Redskin. You're listening to The Fan. Grant and Danny, 106.7 The Fan. You tweeted out of the blue, like the other night, you were about to do a stand-up set on Zoom. What was that about?
Yeah. So it's, you know, people are trying to do stuff. And we can't quite gather in person just yet. Stand-up comedy, I think, will be one of the last things, or comedy shows in general, one of the last things to come back, because comedy clubs are cesspools. They're gross. They're basements. They're, you know, tight venues where you're shoulder to shoulder with people and it's vulnerable and awkward and you're breathing in what everyone else is breathing out, and it's, you know, it's meant to be that way. It's dingy. That's kind of like the nature of these shows. And, you know, we can't really do that for a while. So organizers and different people have put together, you know, their bastardized versions of them. And it was certainly weird, I'll tell you that, staring at my computer, trying to make sure I didn't look at myself, but looked at, you know, the camera to do 45 minutes of stand-up. But I did it sitting down right here where I normally do the radio program with my pal Grant Paulson. And it was awkward, but, you know, it was okay. It was better than not doing it, I think.
So the audience was on Zoom?
Yep. So I don't know how they did
that. You could hear them laughing?
Yeah. So the people that had stuff going on where they were muted their mics, thankfully, or the host muted. The organizer of the show would try to
figure out where noise is coming from. But are you delivering without a sound? Like, are you just delivering with nothing and you're like, okay, let me give them a second to laugh. I'll go to the next joke.
Yes. That one, the first one. Where you go, you know, you're used to normally, like you say something, people laugh at the appropriate time, a little bit more delayed, a little bit odder, depending on people's internet speeds, whatever. But, you know, you had to have a lot of confidence, that's for sure, just to sort of get through it.
Is this going to be a thing? Do you think, like, companies are going to hire out to do this?
I don't know. The thing that I don't get is, I don't know how you organize it. I don't know how they were able to figure out how to do it. So, in other words, let's say you were a customer and, you know, the organizer of the show was charging $5 a head, right? Normally it's like 10 or 15 or whatever it is to, at the venue, but he's charging $5 a head. I don't know how he collected the money. I don't know how he, you know, then would then give out the password. So I guess in theory, right, if you were like, okay, here's your $5 via PayPal or Venmo or whatever, you could probably go, well, here's the meeting link and send it to 50 of your friends if you really wanted to. So I don't know. I mean, so people are asking me, hey, what, where's the link? And I'm going, well, it's not really mine to give out. It's the organizer of the show who's, you know, trying to collect money and stuff like that. And I don't know. I don't know how the whole thing works. I couldn't figure out how you limited people or, you know, allowed them in or not. I don't know if there are certain host privileges that do that or don't do that. It was all very above my pay grade. I just logged in when I was told to, and I had my mic set up so my audio was better than most people's and did my jokes and, you know, went to the next room and watched television.
Did it go better or worse than you thought it would?
Better than I thought. Better than I thought. Wow. I thought it would just be completely miserable and why am I doing this? And I was dreading it a little bit, but, you know, it wasn't good. I mean, it doesn't replicate the real thing, you know? It's like the equivalent. Actually, I won't use that analogy. It's not a great one. It's basically like learning how to drive, but while sitting on the couch. You know, you can like hear about driving, but you didn't, you're not actually behind the wheel. You're not actually doing it. It's like you're listening to someone that has driven before talk from the next room over. That's the equivalent of how realistic it was.
A movie club's a little over an hour away. We watched Thor Ragnarok over the weekend. We've got to pick another movie to watch tonight. Movie club is still alive and well and surging and going strong, so we'll do that at 12:45. So I mentioned we're going to debut a new game today. We're not really sure if it's going to go well or not. That's how these things work. If it doesn't, we'll never play it again. If it does, we will do it at some point in the near future probably because there's not a whole lot else going on. The game, Danny, is going to be called Random Redskin. We set some parameters yesterday. So it's just you and I kind of going back and forth, and we're going to pull the names of dudes that were on the Redskins, we said, for at least 2 years. That way it's not like some guy who had a one-game cameo we don't remember. But they had to play for the Redskins for 2 years. We'll give a couple of nuggets, like maybe the college they went to, the years they played for the team, and maybe offense or defense or something like that. Then we'll ask a yes or no question, and we got to try to name the random Redskin. And if the game works out the way I want it to, it's just going to be funny to hear names that played on the team that we haven't thought of in a bunch of years. Like, oh, yeah, I remember that guy. That's kind of the whole goal I'm going for, is for people to be in their car and go, oh, yeah, that guy. That's funny.
I remember that guy.
That's kind of what I'm thinking. Did you put together a list yet for the final hour of the show? I've got like five guys to go with.
Yeah, I got kind of a tentative list, so I wanted to make sure I had all the rules down. So we give some information about the player, right? So what did we agree to what that information was going to be, where it's like offense, college, and one other thing?
And years with the team.
Okay.
That way it gives you like, okay, he played for Jim Zorn. He was on defense. So maybe you could use one of your questions to say, did he play defensive line? Did he play DB? Whatever. And you kind of whittle it down. Because if you know the position, I think it's a little bit easier sometimes to do it. Mm-hmm. And, and if it doesn't work, we can't guess any of them, then we'll just do more yes or no questions until we nail them.
Roger.
But the idea is, you know, I remember back in the day, years and years ago, where the junkies would just randomly reference these guys from like 96. And I always thought it was like, oh, I've missed that guy. That guy had a great game against Dallas once. That's kind of the idea behind Random Redskin. Well, so we'll see if it plays. I don't know. I got a handful of guys, though. I'll tell you, I just went through Redskins Pro Football Reference, and I would just see a name and it would pop up. I'm like, perfect. I haven't thought of that player in 9 years, but man, did I love him for like 6 weeks at one point. So that's kind of what you're looking for. And maybe people can play with us. I mean, I don't know if I trust enough yet that they could play with us, but maybe they could come up with one and give us a couple hints, and we could try to guess their random Redskin as well. So that's all coming up today in the 1 o'clock hour here on The Fan. I still want to get into the Forbes list of the highest paid athletes. You know, Kirk Cousins, just the way that they did it, they went late June of 2019 to late June of late May rather, start of June, 2019 to 2020. And Cousins, because of his restructuring and when he got his basically upfront signing bonus for this coming year, is number 9 on the list this year in the highest paid athletes in the world.
That's wild.
So it starts with Roger Federer, and it, you know, you get like your Cristiano Ronaldo and Lionel Messi and those types. LeBron James is the first American athlete of 5. And Cousins, who made over $60 million this year, because he made his $28 million last year, and then he got like 30 plus signing bonus from restructuring his deal this year. just jammed into those months the way that they did it. He only had 2 million in endorsements. A lot of the other guys had like 30 million endorsements, 50 million that they made. He's basically all made and then two endorsements. But how do more quarterbacks or more people not hire Mike McCartney to be their agent?
Seriously, dude.
He's done so well by Cousins. And Kirk is a smart guy, and he, you know, like Dak, negotiated well. Like, Prescott is going to be in the exact same boat. I mean, really, the team gives you the ability to have the leverage, and by mishandling and miscalculating early on, kind of puts you in a position to make that money.
What's
but if
wrong
I'm
that
a player,
right. Yeah.
I'm calling Mike McCartney and going, dude, you understand that the guaranteed money part of this. You're getting guaranteed contracts every single year for this guy. How do I get you to represent me? I'm surprised more players aren't trying to either do that or just go the route of getting their agent to get them guaranteed money and go 1 to 2 years at a time. That's what everybody in the league should be doing.
It depends on your spot. Quarterbacks, yes. I don't know that if you're, you know, a fullback, not forget about fullback, but if you're a running back or a high-impact position where there's more injury and attrition rates, you may not want that. You may really just want that long-term ridiculous deal that looks like an albatross after a couple of years.
But you're still
right?
Never getting that money. You're getting cut. You're getting 2 years, 3 years worth of money. If you go year to year with guaranteed contracts, you're still going to make more, I think, at that position.
I don't know. There's got to be a reason why it's not done. I just – you're right.
Because I think it's hard because I think teams don't like doing it. But look at Cousins. Cousins still has people who call him greedy or say he's a jerk or what. I think you lose in the court of public opinion when you do it that way a lot of the time.
When you do the short terms?
You're seen as the bad guy. You know, you're always negotiating. People think you're looking for every penny or whatever it is. But, like, if you look at Le'Veon Bell or any of these guys, just looking at running backs who signed these huge deals – I haven't looked at his structure, but like, he's probably out in New York after this year, right? I mean, if he did a 1 year deal for guaranteed at $415 million the next year, I don't know. Maybe you could do the research and look it up, and it would be the other way. I just happen to believe that if every single year, every penny you make is guaranteed, rather than signing a contract that after 2 years leaves you dumped and looking for a new contract, I think you make more money this way. But there's no doubt about quarterback. That's obvious. I wonder
sure,
about the other positions.
Yeah, I would too. I mean, my instinct is you'd rather take the long-term deal if you can find it in a league where there's so much injury and attrition and turnover. But your point makes sense. I mean, if you do a couple, do 3, 4, 1 years, do you make more than if you signed 1 5-year where you cut after 4 and then maybe get a second contract that isn't as good? I don't know.
But your instinct is like in our job. Like, you and I should take long-term deals. A long-term deal for an NFL player is not worth the paper that it's written on. When you say you should, you know, in a league where you get injured, you should do a long-term deal. A long-term deal is 4 or 5 years. There's no contracts where that money means anything in year 4. You see what I'm saying?
No, of course they do. That's what I just said. Is like, if you would rather have, instinctively, I'd rather have a longer deal, knowing that I'll get cut after, you know, when it's comfortable for the team, because they'll regret signing it and they'll cast me aside. Instinctively, I'd still rather do that than go year to year with the injury risk. But especially if you're a quarterback, then you're a lot more likely to be playing until you're 38, 39, 40 years old, etc. But instinctively, I go, no, I'd rather have a long-term deal. But you're making a good point about that may not be as secure as you think it is.
Yeah, and I'm sure there are examples where you find a guy who got hurt and you'd say, okay, like if Alex Smith was going year to year or something like that, he's an example where because he was under contract for a couple more years, he made another $40 million. So, yeah, if you have a catastrophic injury, of course, you're better off with the money coming down the road. But I'd say that's few and far between. Like, is that justify the whole idea of the paradigm? I wouldn't think so. Grant and Danny on the Fan, we'll get you a double play next. What's going on in our lives? Nothing to do with sports. We are going blitzing in 15 minutes at noon right here on 106.7 The Fan. Thanks for making Grant and Danny part of your day. We are on the air live and local until 2. Chad Dukes versus the world at that time. Beltway Blitz in 10 minutes on the teams you care the most about in town. Excited to talk to Barry Sferluga about what's going on with the Washington Nationals and Major League Baseball. We can have games. There's also some audio we want to play next hour from Buster Olney, who says there's a chance not only that baseball won't be played in 2020, that it could be years before baseball is played again. Now, I'm not buying that at all, for the record, and I think that's just foolish. But he said it, and he is plugged in and talks to people on both sides of the aisle, so We will react to that the next hour. Right now it is time for our double play. So, Danny, this weekend, for the first time, I had an opportunity to I told you I was going to get a haircut. It was a great, great experience. Got my haircut, walked out, felt like $1 million, and I had already started driving toward home, toward King George County, to get said haircut. So I said, you know what, I'm going to take my parents some lunch. I haven't seen them. They don't get to see the baby at all. We'll be socially distant. We'll stay outside. We will not hug or high-five or shake hands or anything, but I'm going to go down and I'm going to see my parents, and they have a nice little backyard area where we can hang out, and they don't have the pool open or anything, but we'll just sit out in the sun, and it'll be fun. So the baby played with bubbles and ran around, and I caught up with my parents, and it was a good time for everybody. But while I was there, my mom brought out a bunch of pictures that she found. They've been cleaning my garage to give me, and I'm telling you, these were like awesome 25-year-ago, great pictures from my childhood, all the way spanning through maybe like 15 years ago as I was a little bit older. But they were like some of the first games I ever covered, being at a Wizards game, talking to Juwan Howard, and, you know, Redskins training camp, you know, rapping with Ken Harvey, and just like some really, really cool pics of being on the field, coaching up Brian Mitchell right before kickoff, wearing these big baggy khakis, looking like I'm giving him some kind of pep talk. So I was loving these pictures. I'm laughing. I'm looking at them. I'm like, this is great. I didn't know they existed. I'm going to take them home. Made my month to see these pictures. So when I loaded up the car and I put the baby in her car seat and everything, we drive off. I get home and I'm unpacking the car and don't think anything of it. Last night I'm laying down in bed and I realize I didn't see those pictures today. So I start, you know, your mind starts racing and you think about all the worst things that could happen. And I'm thinking, there's no way I left that clipboard of pictures on top of the car. Well, sure enough, guy, I drove off. I had the pictures on a clipboard on top of the car, and I drove off with all these great memories and these great pictures. My parents yesterday were along the side of the road in King George finding one picture after another in the grass. So who knows how many got away and how many they found. But they got most of them, it seems like. But my pictures were strewn all over Route 206 in King George County. After I had just found them, all these great memories, it was about as depressing a day until I found out that they found some of them as has happened in a long time. But how dumb is that? Like, when's the last time you've done that? I put them on top of the car so that I could put the baby in the car seat, and I didn't grab them right away. I just left them up there and drove off.
Every parent, 648 times. You've got 647 to go, dude. Everyone's done that. The number of times I have driven with the metal coffee thermos on the roof, and then it makes a thundering, terrifying sound as the car starts moving. And we're like, oh my God, we're being pelted by metal hail. We're under assault. Is it a grenade? No, it's just my stupid coffee thing that's now spilled everywhere. It'll happen a million more times. It's the nature of being a parent. You have to carry a billion things just to go 6 minutes. Of course that happens to you. I'm sorry it happened with valuable memorabilia, stuff that you cared about. But, man, oh, man.
So you've done that recently?
Of course.
Because to me, that just seemed like it was so stupid. Like, no one does that.
Everyone does that.
Within a minute of setting it there, and it was hanging over the edge of the car. It wasn't like I put it in the middle and I couldn't see it. I just turn around and walk away. I probably did that 10 years ago with, like, a soda or something, you know, or like a cup of water or something. But
I did it with a LaCroix last week with my 2-year-old. Absolutely. You always do that, and you go, oh, no. But it happens because you're so focused. Because usually what happens is there's some complication getting your child in the seat. When they're big enough and the president's pretty much there, she's starting to probably get there where she can wiggle a little bit. When they get enough strength,
yeah,
in them,
it's a pain in the butt now.
They're surprisingly stronger than you'd think. And when you have to use both power and finesse to get, like, the fine motor of plugging the the connectors into the different spots in different chairs and mechanisms, that's got to be fine motor, but you also need to use some resistance to push them down, and then they resist more, and the whole thing's awful. You're focused on something else, you forget about the other things.
Ruined my day, but it's gonna have most of them back, so I'll slowly be posting some of them to Twitter so people can make fun of my bowl cuts and how big my shoulder pads. Grant and Danny on 106.7 The Fan, the Blitz.
Okay, picture this. It's Friday afternoon when a thought hits you. I can waste another weekend doing the same old whatever, or I can conquer it. I can hop into my all-new Hyundai Santa Fe and hit the road. Any road. The steeper, the better. Because my all-new Santa Fe is available with H-Track all-wheel drive, so I can hit the trail without a worry in the world. Heck, with three rows and best-in-class rear cargo space, I can pack the whole family in with all our gear. We've got available dual wireless charging for our phones, so we'll never lose touch with civilization, and we won't lose touch with the primordial power of Mother Earth. So which is it? Waste the weekend or do something a little more epic and conquer it in the all-new Hyundai Santa Fe. Visit HyundaiUSA.com or call 562-314-4603 for more details. Hyundai, there's joy in every journey.